It's time for our weekly roundup of national news stories. The Trump administration has decided to expel 60 Russian diplomats from the country and closed a Russian consulate. Lawmakers and leaders are weighing in on the new national security advisor, and states are suing the government over adding a citizenship question to the 2020 census.
You can add your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Do you think kicking Russian diplomats out of the country is the right response to an attack on a Russian ex-spy in the UK? Will it deter such attacks in the future? And what do you think of National Security Advisor John Bolton? Do you think we need a hard line on North Korea and Iran, or does it not concern you? Call in now with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can also send an email to ideas@wpr.org.
Tracy Wilkinson is a reporter covering foreign affairs for the Washington Bureau of the Los Angeles Times. Tracy, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you.
So, Tracy, let's start with that decision to expel 60 Russian diplomats from the U.S. and close the Russian consulate in Seattle. Give us just a bit of background. What led up to this step?
Well, this came in response to the attack in Britain on a former Soviet spy, Sergei Skripal, and his adult daughter. A nerve agent was used to attack, to poison them. Basically, they're still in critical condition. Didn't kill them, but they were very badly hurt. And so, after many such activities by Russia, allegedly by Russia, the United States has, over time, gradually taken sanctions here and there. But this has been finally the toughest, most aggressive response to date, expelling 60 Russian diplomats is apparently the largest expulsion, at least since the Cold War and possibly even before that. So it's quite dramatic, and it was taken in coordination with many countries around the world, mostly in Europe, I think 26 other countries or international organizations. So it's come as a very tough response to that attack. It follows, as I say, sanctions that have been imposed for other reasons, such as Russian meddling in 2016 elections and those sorts of things. But this one was specifically in response to that attack, using a nerve agent, a chemical weapon, essentially, on the soil of a NATO ally and close partner of the United States.
Well, and Tracy, as you said, this is not the first time that there have been attacks on people that Russia sees as now enemies. But Moscow has always denied involvement, as they did this time. And it's an interesting time, really, because Europe is not as united as it has been, partly because of Brexit and that dynamic. But as you said, European countries, others, and the United States are really taking a very united stance on this.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, a few European countries did not join in, and that's also notable. But a lot of countries say they have also experienced interference or some sort of meddling by Russia. Estonia, some of the former Soviet republics, France, Germany, you know, they all have said that they think Russia has been meddling in their elections. So I think that that was impetus for there to be a much more united stance than you might expect.
What are we hearing from the White House about this move?
Well, that's interesting. The White House announced the move, but Donald Trump has not said word one about it, which is kind of interesting. He normally, this could be seen as a very tough, successful action, and he, you know, rarely shies away from claiming credit for these kinds of forceful actions, and he has not tweeted, he has not said word one about this. The White House has, as I said, announced it, and has said it was, a critical action to take, and in coordination with our allies and in support of Britain. But Trump himself has remained unusually quiet for his style, though not so unusual in terms of his regard for Vladimir Putin and Russia.
Well, and reports that I read said that in the conversation that President Trump had with Vladimir Putin last week, congratulating him on his election win, this topic did not come up. And yet here we are just a few days later, really, and this major action has been taken. Do we get a sense that this expulsion was coming from President Trump or from those around him?
Well, his staff insisted it was his decision, but I'm certain that it was weeks in the making that the State Department had a big role in encouraging this. And I think there are members of his staff. In fact, most of Trump's staff is much more willing to be forceful about Russia. So I think this was kind of percolating around him, and then they say he ultimately signed off on it. But as you know, he's always very reluctant to criticize Putin or Russia. And as you mentioned, that phone call just last week, where he congratulates Putin on an election that, you know, many of the monitors said was a sham, and yet he congratulates Putin on that and does not raise this issue of the attack in Britain.
We are talking with Tracy Wilkinson right now. She covers foreign affairs for the Los Angeles Times, and we're taking a look at some of the biggest news stories this week out of Washington, many of which have that international aspect. Tracy, moving on to John Bolton being named National Security Advisor, taking the place of H.R. McMaster. What do we know about Bolton's reputation and experience?
Well, he has a very harsh reputation, actually. A lot of people in the foreign policy community were alarmed at his appointment. He is we called him a take-no-prisoner kind of guy. He's very forceful. He's very much a hawk. He has advocated regime change and bombing North Korea and Iran. So he's taken some pretty, I think some people would call extreme positions. He's also very experienced in Washington, though. You know, he was the UN ambassador under Bush, and he's been around these circles for a long time. So unlike McMaster, he actually knows how Washington works and can probably get a lot of things done. But I think the concern is, among many people, that McMaster and Rex Tillerson as Secretary of State were two of the voices that would sort of bring Trump back from the more radical positions that he might be advocating, and could argue for why, you know, certain things should happen a certain way. And now both are gone. McMaster's gone, and Tillerson was fired and is being replaced, if he's confirmed, by CIA Director Mike Pompeo. So there you also have a fairly hardline, hawkish voice. So I think that's the concern, that there won't be dissenting voices any longer in the White House.
It's interesting because it seems like Bolton has always taken the go-it-alone approach to American foreign policy. He, even though he was the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, he had spoken very openly about the fact that he didn't think the United Nations should exist. And it seems like he's really in step with President Trump in the we can do this on our own when we see it in our own best interest.
Yes, definitely. This America first, America only attitude. You're right. He has not advocated for multilateral institutions at all. He advocated for getting rid of the UN as he was ambassador to it. And, I don't think sees much need for the EU. I don't know about NATO. I mean, I think he would understand that NATO is important. But generally, he very much sees pursuing U.S. interests as the first and foremost and only only goal. And you're right, it's very much in step with what Donald Trump has advocated.
Former President Jimmy Carter was among those critical of the appointment of John Bolton. Here he is talking about the president's decision.
John Bolton has been the worst mistake he's made. He's advocated going to war preemptively against North Korea, against Iraq, against Iran even. And so I think that is particularly ill-advised, because the National Security Advisor, I know from experience, is the most listened to advice that a president gets.
Jimmy Carter there talking about the appointment of John Bolton as National Security Advisor. And Tracy, you know, North Korea is one of the biggest foreign policy issues on the table right now, with a possible meeting between President Trump and North Korea's Kim Jong-un coming up in May. How do you see the appointment of John Bolton affecting that possibility?
Well, it could perhaps scare the North Koreans, you know, seeing someone that hard line in that job, if they're paying that close of attention, it possibly could, you know, make them sort of sit up and take notice and decide that, you know, they've got to do something about that. On the other hand, it might discourage them from making any kinds of concessions. So it's a little dicey to see how that's going to go. You might have seen that Kim went to Beijing this week, and that was a first that we know of him traveling outside of his country as leader of North Korea. But I think it was largely to sort of shore up his bargaining position, you know, to sort of show that he and China are on the same page in this, which has not been clear lately. So he's definitely getting ready, Kim is, but I think the Bolton could be a bit of a wrench in the works here.
Are we hearing much support for the Bolton appointment? Are there some supporters who are really glad to see him in that position?
There are some. There are a few Republicans on Capitol Hill who praised the appointment. And judging from my mail, there are quite a few people out there who thought it was a good idea. They like the toughness. But I think most of your experts in the foreign policy community have expressed concern.
Let's move on to the 2020 census. This week, the Commerce Department announced it would be putting a question on the next census asking whether someone is a U.S. citizen or not. And there was immediate backlash, and several states are planning to take legal action over that decision. Why is including a citizenship question causing such a stir?
Well, I think a lot of states, including California, think that that question will scare a lot of people who maybe are not here legally or who are not citizens, and cause them not to participate in the census at all, meaning they aren't counted. And if you have you know, hundreds of thousands of people who are not counted, obviously in California's case, you could lose millions of dollars in federal revenue and even possibly a congressional seat. So I think the concern is that question will drive people away from participating. People are already nervous about providing personal information, and I think in this climate, especially immigrants are very nervous. And so I think that the concern is that there would be an undercount, that question will scare so many people away.
Let's take a listen to White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders talking about the decision.
We've contained this question that's provided data that's necessary for the Department of Justice to protect voters and specifically to help us better comply with the Voting Rights Act.
Tracy, what is the connection between adding this census question and enforcing the Voting Rights Act?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not quite sure. They contend that they want to be sure that the right people, in other words, the people who legitimately are authorized to vote. But a lot of the critics think it's sort of a bogus connection being made. It's going to be difficult for the opponents to prove that case, especially this late in the process. But the information they say would allow them to more accurately calculate who should be voting and then how many actually vote and turn out and those sorts of things.
Sarah Sanders also claimed that a citizenship question has been included in every census from 1965 until 2010. Is that accurate?
No. I've got notes actually on that. It has been included in some surveys, but not in the 10-year full census, and since the 50s.
We're talking with Tracy Wilkinson, a reporter covering international affairs for the Los Angeles Times, recapping some of the top stories out of Washington.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you agree with the plan to add a question about U.S. citizenship to the 2020 census, or do you see it as a political move? Are you worried about its effect on federal funding or redistricting? And with President Trump suggesting that the U.S. military pay for a border wall with Mexico, where do you think the money should come from? Or should a wall or border security even be a priority at all? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Right now, we're picking up our conversation about the top national political stories of the week with Tracy Wilkinson. She's a reporter for the Los Angeles Times based in Washington, D.C.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Where does border security rank in your list of national priorities? And is a wall with Mexico important to you? Call 800-642-1234. 1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Tracy, let's talk about that border wall funding. It's a border wall with Mexico continues to be something that President Trump is pursuing. Finding the funds for that wall has been a challenge. And he tweeted out a new suggestion this week. What was his proposition?
He's now saying maybe the military can pay for it, you know, borrow from the Pentagon's budget, which is a hefty budget, we might add. It's a huge increase that he's asked for and is getting. And so his suggestion is that they could pay for it, the argument being that, you know, the border security is a national security issue, and so it would be appropriate for military funds to go to it. I'm not sure how that's going to fly. I have a lot of opinions about how appropriate a border wall is, and I don't think that I'm not sure. I don't know that his supporters care how it's paid for as much as it being built, but I just don't think that. Well, we'll see if the military is going to be willing. It shows that he's not been able to get Congress to pay for it, to get clearly Mexico to pay for it. So he is sort of scrambling. And Vice President Pence just again yesterday talked about how we're going to build the wall. So it is something they are still talking about.
Let's go to the phones, and Corey in Sheboygan Falls is up first. Hi, Corey.
Hi. How's it going?
Good. What would you like to say?
I just wanted to call in and give my opinion about the law. And I mean, I don't think it's a necessary thing. I mean, people can go over, under, around. I mean, most people stay on overstayed visas, from my understanding. The other thing is, it's just, again, another lie, as I thought Mexico is paying for said wall. And, I mean, it's just being passed on to the American taxpayers again. And it's something that's totally unnecessary just to make people, I don't know, get riled up about a problem that really isn't so severe.
All right. Thanks so much for that call, Corey. And, Tracy, one of the questions is, how easy is it to say we're going to divert money from the defense budget into this? It seems like there are probably some hurdles to go through for that as well.
Well, there would be some hurdles, but also the Pentagon has some discretionary funds that I suppose they could use. But I agree with the caller in that, you know, most the Trump administration talks about blocking illegal drugs coming into the United States from Mexico. Well, most of those drugs are smuggled in through checkpoints, through legal established checkpoints. And so building a wall doesn't stop that. Immigration, illegal immigration from Mexico is actually, at least by Mexicans, is actually down and, in fact, is now as many Mexicans leave as come. So that's not an issue anymore. So the wall seems to be more of a political issue than a really practical issue.
And the omnibus spending bill that was signed last week, President Trump wanted a significant amount of money basically funding for the whole wall, but got what he referred to instead as a down payment. How much did he get of what he was expecting?
I don't know. I don't know. It was a fraction. He was not happy.
Let's go on to Paul Ryan from Wisconsin, Speaker of the House. Rumors again circulating that he is planning to resign as Speaker. That comes from a fellow Republican. What was being said, and where are those rumors coming from?
Well, they're coming from, as you mentioned, this other Republican. Paul Ryan's office denied it. They said he's not planning to go anywhere, but you know more about Wisconsin politics than I. There may be a lot of other factors behind there. Clearly, it's not been a good time to be speaker in the sense that you've got an unpredictable president who doesn't always back you up, and midterms are coming up that could be problematic for a lot of the Republicans. So it's a dicey time, but I don't see any hard evidence that Paul Ryan will be quitting.
How successful has Paul Ryan been in raising money for national Republican causes and for specific Republicans who are running for re-election?
I think he's been fairly successful. I don't think money is really ever the problem for Republican candidates. They seem to have money. The question now is going to be more about messaging and, certain anti-Trump sentiment that does exist in some parts of the country, and other, other issues, women's issues and those sorts of things. I don't think money is as big a problem.
Let's go back to the phones, and Sharon in Milwaukee is up. Hi, Sharon.
Yes.
Hi. What would you like to share?
You were talking about the issue of the wall. Just went to share that although border security is something that is actually important, I don't think that a wall in the year 2018 is the appropriate way to address that.
And what do you think would be more appropriate, Sharon?
That's a good. I think using I don't have a really great answer for that. But it's building a physical structure when it's not, we have air travel. I mean, there are things in place now that actually, checking people's passports, et cetera.
And your phone quality is not great, Sharon, so we'll leave it there as we're ending the segment shortly. Tracy, it does seem that a border wall isn't necessarily taking advantage of some advances in technology and newer approaches to things like security.
Indeed, there are a lot of technological ways to better monitor the border. You could beef up and better train the Border Patrol. But a wall, a physical wall, makes no sense. And the money that is in the budget now is for fencing and repairing fences that already exist. You know, there are already physical barriers along a lot of that border. So building a wall just seems so retro, frankly.
Well, Tracy, thanks so much for spending the time with us today. We enjoyed it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Tracy Wilkinson is a reporter covering foreign affairs for the Washington Bureau of the Los Angeles Times. She was with us for our weekly look at the top stories in national politics.